I'm Carrie Simpson, president of Culture Guard. Thank you for joining me for this important special, Life Matters. On September 14, 2011, Alberta Court of Queen's Bench Justice Joanne Veed sparked outrage among civil Canadians and catapulted the long overdue abortion debate back to the political front lines. The case I refer to involves convicted baby killer Katrina Effort, who in 2005 was 19 and gave birth to a healthy baby boy named Rodney. Shortly after his birth, Katrina killed baby Rodney by strangling him with her thong underwear. Katrina then disposed of his tiny body by throwing the now lifeless baby over the fence and into her neighbor's yard. Two juries convicted Katrina of murder, but the court overturned the murder conviction and, taking the law out of the hands of Canadians, chose instead to convict Effort of infanticide with no jail time. But Justice Veed didn't stop there. She went on to demonstrate her total disregard for the will of the people and stated, and I quote, "While many Canadians undoubtedly view abortion as less than ideal solution to unprotected sex and unwanted pregnancy, they generally understand, accept, and sympathize with the onerous demands pregnancy and childbirth exact from mothers, especially mothers without support." Justice Veet went on to say, "Naturally, Canadians are grieved by an infant's death, especially at the hands of the infant's mother, but Canadians also grieve for the mother." Most Canadians didn't grieve for this mother. Justice Veed has now defined infanticide as being akin to abortion and now permits the murdering of an inconvenient baby as being justifiable, understandable, and acceptable. In Canada, it is now open season on any baby considered to be a burden. As news reports of the case emerged, Canadians were shocked to learn that Canada does not have any laws protecting unborn babies. In Canada, it is legal to kill a baby up to the moment he or she takes their first breath. Justice Veet is willfully out of touch with Canadians. This case was appealed to the Supreme Court of Canada, where the pristine justices of the High Court refused to acknowledge the loud demands for justice, thus failing to protect Rodney Effort and any other inconvenient baby. Instead, just like Rodney's mother dumping his lifeless body over the fence, the Supreme Court of Canada callously dumped the case. The time is now. Canada must create laws to protect our children, our babies, our future, and ensure that Canada is a nation that is recognized for protecting and valuing life, not destroying it. The time has come to stop the legal extermination of children in Canada. Joining me now is Campaign Life Coalition's president for BC, John Hoff. Mr. Hoff, lots is happening in this nation that is changing dramatically the whole discussion, the whole, do I dare use the term, debate on the issue involving abortion.
It's an issue we don't want to debate. It's an issue no one wants to debate. It's a debateless issue. It's going to be debated. And Carrie, those changes are happening. And they're going to happen in spite of what everyone else wants.
John, this is special that we're putting together for Culture Guard. And this is an educational tool for people. And this, we've entitled this Life Matters. And this issue, this debate, I mean, you guys have never stopped the debate, never have stopped the discussion, contrary to the orders of our Prime Minister, I might add. Now, you know, tell me what your reaction was when you heard in the news that our Conservative Prime Minister, Stephen Harper, declared or decreed, I'm not sure, I think he was actually hoping it would be viewed as a decree, that discussion on the topic of life, also known as abortion or the killing of our children in the womb, we're making wombs into tombs, wasn't going to happen. That would be illegal. You would be being a bad Canadian, Mr. Hoff, if you dare raise that word. What was your reaction when you heard that?
Well, first reaction was my shoulders drooped for those people who've been in the trenches all these years debating this issue and bringing it to the forefront. My shoulders drooped for the efforts we'd made within the Conservative Party to bring the issue to the forefront and to have them debate this issue, to nominate and elect pro-life Conservative members of Parliament. My shoulders drooped for them and for all of those people just who firmly thought that there was some hope within this Prime Minister's realm. But my next thought, Carrie, was that I guess we got to look for the next prime minister. So my shoulders picked up again, because I know this isn't our debate. It's a debate that goes beyond which prime minister happens to be serving at this time.
Well, you know, see, in my reaction, I'll tell you, my shoulders didn't droop. It's them's fighting words, Prime Minister Harper. You know, you want to put a declaration down before me in a free and democratic society, one who supposedly values free speech, constructive debate, lively debate, rigorous, vigorous debate. You want to dictate to me what I will talk about and what I won't? I don't think so, Mr. Hoff.
I've been at this many years, Carrie, and I know your enthusiasm knows no bounds. But we still have to be realistic as to what we can do with the MPs that we have elected, what we can do within those constituencies where we do have some influence, and we do have to work within the parliamentary system. There isn't an appetite to debate this overall in Canada. We have to acknowledge that as a reality. That's not going to make the debate stop. That's going to make the debate go into areas where it can be debated.
Well, and you know, we are seeing a different tool being given to the people now, the internet, the ability to communicate instantaneously with people, John Hoff. Has this changed the rules of this game?
I've got an even more recent development. I'm debating whether we should go down to the Occupy Vancouver site with our Occupy the Womb pictures and maybe draw attention to it with those. There seems to be a sympathetic voice from the media to all those occupiers of different reasons.
You just want to become, you're an occupier wannabe.
I'm just an perhaps I'm an occupier wannabe, but they seem to be getting an ear for their message, and their message seems to be making some waves.
Even though nobody really knows what that message really is.
Well, that's interesting. We've got a message. We know what it is. We want to deliver it. And Mr. Harper won't talk about it.
Well, I think Mr. Harper's going to find a new vocabulary that will be coming forth from his own words or his own lips on this matter, John. Now, let's talk a little bit, because one of the things that I think most Canadians find shocking, and I use that word almost as an understatement, when you tell people, and I had this conversation with four people just yesterday, and I said, you realize that Canada has no laws governing abortion. And they don't believe you. They look at you like you are out to lunch, you know, but then they know, because it's coming from Carrie, that it must be real, because I don't talk about things unless there's a real issue, a real problem that needs to be solved.
And the reason Carrie knows that is because I told her.
No. Very true. All the time.
But
John tells me over and over. No, wait, I want to stop on that. Everybody out there, this man deserves so much credit for his work in the trenches. This has been forever since I've known you, which is getting to be a very long time now, you have dedicated your life to bringing forth a message of truth.
Yes.
And that is a very rare thing in Canada for somebody to diligently, stubbornly, righteously persevere. And I personally want to thank you for all the good work you do and so
thank
many
you.
Who work with you, because there's a team of great people that just keep
thank
plodding
you.
Along, even when you get spanked by the prime minister. You
Ooh.
Be a rebel, John. Be a rebel.
The visualization of that just caught me off guard, Carrie. Thank you for that.
You'll get a whole new crowd as a result of that now. You know, they're going to come on over to your camp.
Bottom line, though, Carrie, in this country, there is no law that governs abortion. The law that was governing abortion was struck down in 1988. But more importantly, that law was reinforced by a later decision called the Sullivan-Lemay decision in this country, which further defined the unborn child as not being a person. And it's a devastating reality that we have to work within as advocates for life and people who recognize that the unborn are people and that the unborn do need protection and that the unborn, even if, as in that case in Edmonton, it's 5 years ago, but the decision was 2 weeks ago, where a young lady, 19 years old, living in her parents' basement, apparently with no visible means of support, the Katrina Effort case, was decided by the appeal court judge in Alberta, who stated that...
This is Judge Veit.
Judge Veit stated to the effect that this was a fourth trimester abortion when she literally, after the baby was born, she choked it with her panties, threw the baby over the fence. She was not charged with murder. She was not charged with... she was charged with manslaughter, but received a suspended sentence. I drew the analogy that this girl killed a living, breathing human being and was charged with littering for throwing the baby's body over the fence. I just could not believe it. And it's all because the debate isn't happening in this country. It's all because the recognition of the unborn isn't being acknowledged. And if it takes those kinds of cases to wake the Canadian people up, I'm all for it. I'm saying bring the debate on.
John, let's look a little bit like at those court cases that you talked about, because in fact there is a law, and the law basically says it's open season on babies. if you're still partially in the womb and haven't sucked that first breath of real air, you are game.
Well, there was a case just last week. There was a baby found floating in the Fraser River. I was devastated. I heard this newborn baby was found floating in the Fraser River. It had died. It was being found by some fishermen. It was being sent for an autopsy. I got news yesterday that the autopsy has been completed, but the report is inconclusive. And I'm sure what they're looking for in this case is whether or not this baby has taken its first breath. And so whether it drowned or was dead before it hit the water.
John, I want to talk, because that case basically came on the heels of the Katrina Effort case.
Right on.
Katrina Effort had sort of polarized the discussion. I know on the show I co-host on Roadkill Radio, we discussed it at length with a wonderful member of the pro-life group in Alberta, Stephanie Fenley. Just wonderful advocate for life and for truth. But this issue, and I've watched this, and I think I've referred to it, it started off as a bit of a, can you believe this? Then that built into, we have to believe it because this is what the judge said. And then it kind of this, it went from a groundswell into what I call a tsunami across this country. And there's lots happening on that front. And I want to come back to that. But before we get to that, I want to talk about abortion as it stands today in Canada. How many babies are being murdered? And I want to, before you answer that, I want to tell you just a quick little story. Of all things, I was watching Piers Morgan the other night, and he had Ozzy Osbourne and his wife Sharon and their son Jack on. And at the conclusion of the show, Jack says, well, I have an announcement, Piers. And he says, okay, we'll make it. I'm going to be a father. And Ozzy Osbourne, of all people, said, you know, well, there's a baby on the way. And I was kind of shocked at that. You know, even Ozzy Osbourne, I mean, all my kids and my grandkids, and I know your grandkids realize that when they see a pregnant woman that there's a baby in that tummy. But now it's become almost legitimate because Ozzy Osbourne has declared that this is not a fetus, that this is not a blob of tissue, people, that there is a baby on the way.
Well, curiously, Carrie, the baby is on the way. Only if you want it. Mm. The degree, and this was one of the court decisions from way back in the early, early days of pro-life protesters being arrested. The degree of wantedness of the child was what the pro-abortion people were recognizing as the legitimate means of giving this child
the test.
It was the degree of wantedness. Well, I think we should wait till they're 14 in that case. There's a lot of kids I know.
Well, you know, but the Katrina Effort case also raises the issue because we have this disposable society now that's so convenient, John. What, you know, if this young woman, and you cannot tell me that any young person or any person in Canada today doesn't have the means to survive. There is a billion-dollar, multi-billion-dollar industry associated with our social services here in Canada that makes that just a misnomer, non-issue lie for anyone to suggest that. But so what? When with me as a mother of four kids and I was left because my husband became ill and passed away, no means, does that mean I just get licensed to do my kids in because, hey, can't support them, you know, poor Carrie, right? John, I want to talk a little bit about the abortion statistics.
Yes, thank you.
How many babies are killed in Canada every year?
I could tell you how many were killed in 2003, 2004, 2005. But in 2006, they stopped counting. We have a real problem in Canada is that Statistics Canada no longer keeps track of the numbers. They've allocated that now belongs to the Canadian Institute for Health Information. We refer to them as CIHI. CIHI has been keeping track of the statistics for years, and they've given them to Stats Canada, who then releases the statistics. Stats Canada was getting all sorts of problems, I guess, releasing the statistics on time or within. We were waiting 4 years for stats to be released.
You are patient, aren't you?
We are very patient. I could tell you how many baby ducks were born in Canada and how many gallons and liters of milk were shipped, and how many eggs were laid in every month. But I can't tell you how many babies died until 4 years later.
Okay, so what you are telling me and all the Canadians, the concerned Canadians that are watching this, and our American audience and our global audience, because we tend to have quite a unique following here now, that we know how many eggs chickens lay. We know how many ducks are probably slaughtered in Canada. We probably know how many moose are shot.
Yes,
we don't know how many babies are killed through the means of abortion.
No. In fact, it's so bad. We have been working, I'd say, for 4 years straight now, trying to get access to that information.
Okay, well, but that's going to be my next question, because it should be simple. If I want information from the government or the information from the Human Rights Tribunal, I simply, it's easy.
No,
John,
it's not easy. And the reason
I make a Freedom of Information request.
Freedom of information and democracy. Do I have to bring the picture up?
Yes, you do.
We really have been working through the freedom of information. Back in 2001, the New Democratic Party in British Columbia passed legislation that banned any information regarding abortion, specific information regarding abortion, totals, the reasons, the age of the baby, the age of the mothers, the number of repeat, any of that information was banned from being released by the Freedom of Information by an NDP law called Bill 21. Bill 21 is valid in BC today, and we have challenged every aspect of it through the Freedom of Information, and they have denied us access. Now, that being the case, that in and of itself should, there are people who should have that information. We should be able to go through health records to find out how many babies have died.
But on a fiscally practical issue, John, I as a taxpayer are paying for this service. I have a right to know how my tax dollars are being spent, don't I?
Yes, Carrie, you do, but except in this case. This is abortion, the debate we don't want to have, the subject we can't talk about. You can find out all of this information about every other topic, but you can't find it out about abortion. And subsequent to that, the abortion clinics, those private in out-of-hospital abortions, those people who demanded that we had to get this into the clinics and out of the hospitals for women's privacy, they have actually stopped submitting their numbers to CIHI, to the Canadian Institute for Health Information. They have stopped giving the numbers. And that's another reason. I made an announcement the other day at a gathering that I was at, and I said, isn't it good news that in British Columbia there are zero abortions, according to Statistics Canada? And everybody started to clap. And I'm going, no, don't start clapping for that. It's a lie. The statistics say there's zero. It's only that they've stopped counting. The numbers have not changed. We're still paying for them. We can tell by the number of dollars that are being spent on abortion that they're still happening. The problem is we don't know how many. We don't know where they're being done. We don't know how many. How can we address a teenage crisis pregnancy problem in this province if we don't know there is one? Mm. It's impossible to do any kind of policy initiatives without the information.
Okay, now let's recap. We have abortion laws. It just basically, the law is in Canada, is it's open season on babies in the womb. You can murder a baby in the womb prior to it taking its first breath.
For any reason or for no reason at all.
And this is right up to full gestation
nine
or
months.
A week or two afterwards.
If you can find a doctor to do it, you can get it done.
All right. Now, if you go and have a baby in Canada, decide that this isn't something that you are going to be able to cope with, you strangle the baby with your thong underwear and throw it over the fence, and you don't serve any jail time. Is that?
That's correct.
Okay. Now, let's also talk about informed consent. Let's talk about all the other aspects that should be part and parcel to a medical procedure.
Every medical
a medical procedure apparently in BC that's not going on because we can't get the statistics on it. Why do the rules change on abortion, John Hoff?
Why do they change? Because this is the subject no one wants to talk about.
But no, that's not true. We want to talk about
Carrie,
it.
Carrie, the reason this situation exists is because it has been portrayed as that privacy issue that no one wants to talk about.
It's been marketed
very, very well.
Okay, so
and
let's...
Now, the reality, of course, is that a lot of people are being harmed. A lot of people are suffering the consequences.
And they're speaking out on that now.
Not just the mothers. We've got the group called Silent No More, women who are just so hard done by, so
broken.
hurt and so broken, families that are suffering consequences of this procedure that are finally finding a voice. And bottom line, when they start raising their voice, much like those people who, let's take the asbestos situation, who are finally finding their voice and raising it, it will be a debate that occurs in this country and a debate that will not be lost by the pro-life movement. It will be won. The victims are going to start coming forward.
John, let's talk a little bit about, okay, informed consent. I said that facetiously because, of course, we know most women are not given the full deal about the harm associated with abortion.
No, but they're even being forced into this by boyfriends.
The coercive element.
Let me tell a quick story. You like
sure.
doing stories. There was a phone call we received in our Kelowna office a few weeks ago. A young girl phoned us and said, could you tell me who owns the building next to the abortion clinic? And I'm going, it's in an office building. It's no. 12 years ago, there was a building next to the abortion clinic. My boyfriend was forcing me to have an abortion. And I need to know who owns that clinic or that building next to the abortion clinic, because there were signs in the windows and there was people standing outside and they were telling me I shouldn't do it. And I went into the building and I had agreed to have the abortion, but once I saw those signs and I got inside that building, I thought, I can't do this. I ran out screaming and I went back to my boyfriend's car. We broke up. I don't want to see him again. But I want to send you a picture of my 12-year-old daughter. I need to say thank you for being there.
Hmm.
Now, those kinds of victims are coming forward. Those kinds of coerced victims. And we tried to pass a law in this country just 2 years ago with, I think it was Brad Trost was involved in it, where an anti-coercion bill. It was deemed to be non-constitutional because coercion was already covered under the criminal code. But try and apply that to an abortion situation? Good luck. We need to do some legislative initiatives that are going to try and get at this problem from a different twist.
John, I want to talk about that because our time is fast running out and there's so much important information that needs to be discussed. And of course, we will do this again. But for those that are tuning into this Culture Guard special, because the time is now, there's initiatives that are happening about this debate. There's a campaign going on called We Want the Debate. Posters, basically, you know, suggesting to the Prime Minister that he was out of touch, you know, on the issues, on what Canadians want on these things. What do you know about this campaign? What do you know about what's going on? And what can people do? And before you answer that, I want to say this, people. Part of the problem here in Canada is that the civil majority, that's probably you, don't think you have a right to speak up. And you know, there's an old saying, the squeaky wheel gets greased. And, you know, I hate to lower this debate to that, but what happens with our elected officials on issues that are what I view as the politically correct idiotology is that the idiots tend to scream and rant and rave and get all the attention. It's like a 2-year-old temper tantrum. Well, you know what, people? I think in Canada, the time has come where we put the 2-year-old temper tantrum in the box and say, no, let's have an adult civil discussion on this. The technology gives us new information that has to be discussed, that has to be taken into consideration. Activist judges should be held accountable and tossed off any bench. How we do that is a whole other subject matter, but I think what we need to see is civil Canadians rise up, use their voices, keep their shoulders not from slouching, Mr. Hoff, but take the position of moving forward. And you need to become involved. This is your democracy. These are your dollars that are being spent to kill babies.
This initiative, Carrie, that you just referred to, this We Want the Debate, January 30th, 2012, that Carrie was referring to, that came to me on Facebook today. I've retweeted and I've tweeted it. I've hooked up to the Facebook page. The word is spreading below the radar. The new social media is a gem for getting this debate that no one, or that Mr. Harper doesn't seem to want to have. And jumping on board, like within hours, there's 600 or 700 people have signed on to this Twitter feed and this Facebook page. It snowballs to the point where it can't be ignored. And that's exactly how this Occupy Vancouver started. It was some guy in a small studio somewhere decided to put it into a publication, and it has snowballed to become a global initiative. This is what's going to happen with this debate, in spite of what the politicians want. The politicians need to accept the fact that they are there to do the people's bidding. They are not there to keep the peace. That's the police officer's job. The peace needs to be broken on this issue. There can be no peace as long as children are dying at the rate they are in this country.
Well, and it goes to this issue, John Hoff. This is about the identity of this nation. And as Canadians, do we value children? Do we value motherhood? Do we value truth? Do we value the sanctity of life? Do we value our democracy and our right to speak freely on issues? This is a big issue. This requires your voices. This is about who we are in this global world, John Hoff, and I would hope that Canadians want to be viewed as people who appreciate and support and protect life, especially that of an innocent baby in the womb of its mother.
Well, it's happening, Carrie Simpson. You use both names. The young people, the survivors of the abortion holocaust that's been going on for 40 years, are speaking out. The young people are grabbing this issue. The youth of this country understand that we can do far better than what we've done. And the reason that the demographic shift is happening in this country, and the realization that the demographic shift is happening, there are young people out there saying, no more. We're not going to kill our children. They're going to show the truth of what's happening to those children, and they're going to show it to the general public whether they want to see it or not. And I love what they're doing.
And you know, I think the young people, because we've had so many wonderful young pro-lifers, people involved in exactly what you're talking, exposing the reality and the truth. Yeah. And I think their motto is, don't lie to me.
Don't lie to me.
Don't lie to me.
Because I know the truth. And here it is. And just this morning, I received 5 young students at my home who want to get out there and do something called a choice chain. And I'm going, I love it. A choice chain. You'll have to do another show about that.
But these
young kids get it. They really get it. And I'm so encouraged.
John Hoff, thank you for all your good work. You are a trooper. You are a warrior. And you are a man who values truth in life, and we need far more Canadians like you that will speak up on this important issue. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Carrie Simpson, and we're going to continue with this special Culture Guard series on talking, the debate that needs to happen because life matters. Joining us now is Brad Trost. He is the MP for Saskatoon-Humboldt, and he has been, I guess, labeled, if you can, a bit of a rogue these days for some of the discussions he's willing to have involving the dreaded debate of abortion and life issues in Canada. Welcome, Brad. Thank you for joining us today.
Good to be talking to you today.
Now, Brad, you're an MP. You are an elected official. You have a constituency. And one of the things that has struck me about your willingness to speak publicly on some issues is you've dared to go where no other elected official wants to go these days. And those are issues involving life and issues that have been catapulted to public debate in recent weeks because of some significant events that have happened here in Canada that are now demanding that this discussion, that this debate take place. And there is this, and I would suggest it is a tsunami of individuals that are gaining momentum and force saying, no, this debate, this discussion on a number of fronts must happen. Now, you're very outspoken on issues. You were outspoken about recently the government's funding of Planned Parenthood. What do you see is happening in Canada, and what do you see that needs to be done?
I think there's a few things. I think right now we do have, and I appreciate you giving me the credit as being the one who's spoken out. That's not quite true. There have been other members of Parliament. There have been motions produced. There have been other things done. So, well, I would say I'm one of a few who's publicly talked about it. I'm not the only member of Parliament. So I think one of the things that's been done is we're right now in majority government situations, and people are not always looking for just issues to talk about for an immediate election. So I think that's one of the reasons that it's been coming up. Another reason is just basic circumstances. There was a judge who reduced a second-degree murder, I believe it was conviction, down to infanticide, and said, well, that was because Canada has no abortion law. Toss on a few things about the debate around whether or not we should subsidize abortion providers internationally with Canadian taxpayers' dollars. You've got a few issues which people can sink their teeth into to get the debate going.
Now, well, what is your position on this? And with all due credit to all those other MPs that have spoken out on these issues, Maurice Vallacott comes to my mind and a number mm-hmm. of others. But come on, Brad, you got the good title. You're the rogue man.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure what qualifies one as a rogue. I think it's just maybe a bit of a stylistic thing. What I find a little bit interesting is this is a parliamentary democracy. MPs are actually charged with speaking out on behalf of their constituents. And while it's considered a little bit strange in Canada and other countries that have almost identical systems, Great Britain, Australia, etc., this is viewed as very normal. So while it's strange for Canada, for most of the democratic world to have debates on whole range of issues, including abortion. I mean, that's the one area where Canada is very unique in the world as a country that has basically no legislation on it. In other parts of the world, it's considered as part of mature adult political discourse.
Well, and you know, that's what struck me when I saw the title. That, of course, this was, I'm referring to a Maclean's magazine article about you and your position on things. And that's something that strikes me so funny here in Canada. You know, have we as a constituency and as a people and as a nation, you know, a nation that prides itself on being civil, this is the other aspect to this, a civil nation that has been trained to conform to no dialogue, no discussion, no debate on an issue that's of supreme importance to Canadians, something that is heartfelt, something that we now see, and you referred, I believe, to the Katrina Effort case, where the judge mm-hmm. said not only, you know, was this mother, you know, to be grieved for by Canadians, most Canadians would. Well, no, I don't grieve for any mother that kills her babies. That's not something that this Canadian does. Why is this debate, and I mean, and as I said, the fact that you'd be given the title of being rogue, is that because you've actually dared to raise the issue? Is that because our Prime Minister, Stephen Harper, has said there's not going to be any discussion and debate on this? And I will tell you for the record, Brad, when I heard that, I said, like hell, this Canadian will discuss and debate whatever she wants to, because that's part of our free speech provisions. That's part of our duty in a democracy. That's my civil responsibility, that when I see, because Canada has no laws governing abortion, that if I as a civil Canadian see an issue and a need, then I must fill that spot with my voice. I think most Canadians, and you said there are no laws, that... And I find that astounding, and there's two parts that are astounding to that, is most Canadians are unaware of that.
Yeah, I think you've touched on a few basic things. It's actually been interesting, some of the feedback I've gotten. First of all, your point about Canadians don't understand the legislative void that is there. Having done surveys in my constituency, most of my constituents who gave feedback, they thought there was some sort of process where you had to get approval from a doctor, and if after so and so many weeks, then it got to be considerably much harder, et cetera, et cetera. And when we've done surveys in my Saskatoon-Humboldt constituency, we've gotten that very clear feedback. It's like, are you sure that there's absolutely nothing, and it's just completely, as it were, open for all comers.
Well, it's open season on babies in the womb, basically.
Yeah, that's what's been the sort of like, you know, the pullback, and people are a little bit, are you sure? And they don't quite want to believe that.
Mm-hmm.
Second thing that I found interesting on feedback, and this may strike people as somewhat interesting, my conservative constituency board and conservative supporters in Saskatoon, Humboldt, are not 100% pro-life. But they were supportive of me speaking out and being able to represent my constituents, both because they had concerns about the fiscal aspects of it, and also because they think it's an important free speech thing, and they feel that Canadians are mature enough to be able to handle this debate robustly. One thing I do get, and referencing back to a former prime minister who complained about lack of serious debates in election campaigns, I tend to disagree. I think that, particularly the longer period of time you take, Canadians can debate issues, can debate them seriously and thoroughly, and if you're prepared to stand up for what you believe, you can't be made into a caricature and laughed at or completely ignored. You just have to be willing to get out there and engage, because a lot more Canadians have an open mind and are a lot more undecided on this issue than I think activists on both sides of the issue sometimes believe.
You know, I want to bring another point into this discussion, because times have changed since, you know, we saw the Supreme Court of Canada decisions in Morgenthaler and involving the midwives and all different kinds of laws and judgments that have sort of crafted our position currently in Canada as far as it relates to abortion. And I suspect that the time has come, and part and parcel to this demand is the fact that technology now allows us to view this whole subject matter through a new lens, if you will. You know, we can see babies in the womb with ultrasound technology. Have you found that this is, you know, adding to the and the other aspect to this too, and one that for my generation, Mr. Trous, you know, is a fact, is a lot of women were lied to about the results, the harm that's done, the psychological guilt, the loss of having an abortion. You know, my friends have confided in me, you know, en masse. You know, if they knew now what they should have known back then, if somebody had been honest with them, that, you know, just to have an abortion is not a insignificant event in their life, that there are implications emotionally, psychologically, physically in some cases. You know, has all of this new information, the new science, the new technology contributing now maybe to a need for this discussion to happen on a nationwide basis?
Well, I think it's given some people who hadn't previously considered the issue a bit of a pause to rethink when they hear about the issue. Now, I'm what would be considered a solid pro-lifer, believing in protecting life from the moment of conception on. But I remember someone, a conservative member of my riding association, who doesn't describe himself as pro-life, said he thought there should be protection from the point of where there was pain for the unborn child. He hadn't previously considered anything else, but that when he'd seen some scientific data and began to realize pain starts fairly early in the womb, that had caused him to rethink his position. Things like that do start to cause more people to be able to grapple and realize. Now, by and large, the pro-life community in Canada has been people who have religious or faith backgrounds, but some of these scientific and other things that are being brought into debate are helping us to expand this human rights issue and to bring in people who are not always traditionally thought of as automatically pro-life. So I think that's very important for the broader community, not just the political community, to begin to bring some of these things about science, about how it affects the health of the woman involved, into the debate. And not having any debate whatsoever hurts everyone involved. It hurts women who don't understand the broader medical implications of their decision, and it hurts us as a society in general.
Brett, another aspect to how we do democracy, if you will, in Canada has changed dramatically. The advent of the internet, the ability for people to communicate with each other and not rely sort of on, well, what we view as the downstream media, conventional media, that seemed to limit and censor the discussion and debate on this subject matter in previous times. Suddenly there is now a new media available to the average person, to the citizen. We rely on that greatly with what the work we do here at Culture Garden with Roadkill Radio, and it has been amazing to see what has transpired when people can talk and communicate and give the debate and discussion themselves. Do you see this as a new dynamic factor in how we do our democracy here in Canada?
In some respects, I actually think it's a return to a much older time. Once upon a time when constituencies were smaller and there weren't populations of 80, 100, 120,000 people per constituent, members of parliament had a lot easier time getting in contact with their constituents. They weren't so much obsessed with the travel back and forth and globe-trotting, which, you know, is now a necessary part of the job. But with the advent of technologies and ways to connect, be it through the internet, be it through Facebook, we have an easier time getting large sample opinions and not just a handful from our constituents. Looking at how I did when I promoted the defund Planned Parenthood petition through my office, a lot of that was done through generally younger women who were networking on platforms such as Facebook and other related technologies and began to propagate the petitions forward. The newer technologies helped to democratize and help to bring members of parliament directly in touch with their constituents, not just with interest groups.
Well, but you're one of those rare MPs, Mr. Trost, that actually cares about what your constituency is saying. There's a lot of elected officials out there who sort of, you know, be damned with my constituency. This is my political agenda. These are my political goals. These are the people who I'm going to appease because they take me out for those fancy dinners and those nice holidays. And besides which, you know, my politically correct ideology, as I refer to it, demands this form of mastery over the citizens who really don't know as much as I do. You know, for those MPs and those elected officials at the provincial level in MLA positions and such, this is where the average citizen is going to have to take more of an active participation, if you will, in their civil society if we are going to maintain it. Because I see right now the issues around politics are becoming increasingly polarized. And we've seen, just witness, you know, the Occupy Vancouver, Occupy Toronto, Occupy Wall Street. There's a whole new kind of political mentality, some would say madness, but I welcome this. I think the involvement of the citizenry and what goes and how we can get our message out and to the ear of our elected officials is important. Now, you talked a little bit about your petition to defund Planned Parenthood. What is the status of that right now? Because, again, most Canadians don't realize that a lot of their tax dollars are going to fund abortions here in Canada. But on top of that, in this incredibly, you know, monetarily restricted times that we're in, we're giving money away to the tune of millions of dollars to third world countries to support an organization that promotes the killing of babies.
Well, let me just say we've made some partial progress on that. Once upon a time, International Planned Parenthood and other related organizations got about $6 million a year with basically no restrictions whatsoever to promote abortion. Since that time, we've blocked them off from getting direct subsidies for abortion. Now, they have been able to slide through, and this was the controversy that erupted the other week, about $2 million a year on a three-year grant with some restrictions. So while they're not directly permitted to subsidize abortions, helping the organization helps them redirect the funds to somewhere else. So that's where it's at right now. They're one example of one organization. There's other organizations that we've been fighting to keep from getting funding, groups like Maria Stopes. That's the name of a organization named after a famous eugenicist. So there have been some restrictions. There has been some progress, but it's not quite what we need yet. Any dollar that goes to help these organizations ultimately funds abortion. And that's what got me so upset. Why should my tax dollars be going to subsidize something I find offensive when there's so many more needs, not only around the world, but right here in Canada.
Yeah, and I think majority of Canadians will agree with you on those fronts as we see, you know, our disposable tax dollars being disposed of to areas that the majority of Canadians, and I agree with you on that, would not like to see their money going to support. Brad, our time is fast closing in here, but I want to end with your thoughts and insights into how best civil Canadians can affect change. What are the tools that you as an MP and your fellow MPs, and especially the Prime Minister, what messages and how should those messages be conveyed to get the attention of our elected officials that we must stop this insanity, that we must start looking at this debate and discussion in a way, as you say, in a civil, adult manner, one that, you know, every woman, every child, the identity of this nation requires us to enter into this discussion. How best to get the attention of the Prime Minister? How best to get the attention of our elected officials on this issue?
Well, I know it's going to sound very basic, but get involved at a very basic level. When my friend Rod Bernews introduced a bill to go after abortion, coercion for abortion, to criminalize that and make that a greater offense, one of my colleagues who was opposed to that bill got up and voted in favor of it. And when we quizzed him as to why, he said, well, I got some nasty emails and letters from the riding, so I figured I better vote for Rod's bill.
Hmm.
Contacting your MP actually makes a difference.
Okay.
Contact regularly. That doesn't mean every week, but on a frequent basis. Get people educated around you who are not always actively involved in politics, and get them to talk to them. Plus, find ways that are basic and simple to multiply your political influence. Being a member of a local riding association, of a local political party, helps. I can tell you very much, I run into Conservative Party members a lot more than I do into general constituents in my constituency. The fact that they're at party functions, not just at other functions, give them extra time to talk to me, and extra degrees of influence. So if there was a pro-life activist on every single Conservative riding association across the country, not only would the local Conservative MP know about it, the Prime Minister would know about it soon. So get involved on those basic grassroots things. Try to make a difference that way. Every member of Parliament who ever got elected and votes in this House started out with just a handful of friends and wanted to make a difference. Got involved by buying a $5 or $10 membership and getting involved. So talk directly to your MP, find ways to multiply your influence, and reach out to your friends and pass the message along.
Brad Trost, MP for Saskatoon-Humboldt, we really appreciate your time and we appreciate your leadership. It is refreshing, and to say the least, and I know I speak on behalf of thousands of Canadians, Mr. Trost, we do appreciate your willingness to take a stand on this issue and to open the doors for debate and discussion on a very long overdue subject matter. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I hear the bell's going and I have to go to a vote in the House.
There you go. And a hardworking MP at that. Thanks again.
No problem.
That was Brad Trost, MP for Saskatoon-Humboldt. One of the rogue MPs, according to Maclean's magazine. That's part two of this series. We're going to be back with part three next. Again, when you hear what Mr. Trost has recommended for you to, as Canadians, be involved in this debate, this important debate and discussion, not only limited to the issues of abortion, but all kinds of things that are affecting you and your family. As we say here at Culture Guard, this is your money. This is your lives. This is your nation. Be involved in it. Make a difference. Have your voice heard. Now joining us is Senator Jerry St. Germain. The senator was first elected in 1983 as a member of Parliament, then appointed to the Senate in 1993 for Langley, Pemberton, and Whistler. Senator, thank you for joining us today on this very important topic.
Thank you very much, Kerry, for taking an interest in this very, very important topic.
Now, Senator, you rose on September 28th, 2011, this year, in the Senate, and you made a speech that, when I first read, I was like, wow, it's about time we saw some leadership, and you went beyond leadership. You gave direction in this speech. Can you tell us a little bit of the motive behind your actions that day? And then I want to talk a little bit about how it was received by your fellow senators and other conservatives.
Well, first off, my interest in this goes back to my early childhood and my upbringing. The respect for the sanctity of life. And that has never changed. And that is part of my character. This is part of my faith, part of my upbringing. And it's been part of my life because I've been involved with various organizations in the Fraser Valley, working with young women who unfortunately have got into positions that, They need assistance, and so I'm still involved in some of this. So, but as far as the reaction, it was subdued in the Senate because I don't think anybody expected me to stand up and make this statement to start with. There was some reaction from some of my colleagues that were sitting behind me, and in support, but there was only two or three. And but this has been a situation that I've been active on for years, and I'm one of the few senators that belongs to the pro-life caucus here in Ottawa. I've supported it financially through my offices, and I've been active for years.
Now, Senator, I want to go through some of your speech because it's worthy of repeat here, and I want to sort of compartmentalize it a little bit and then get your response to why you said what you did and sort of what is happening on the broader picture. I believe that your speech was in fact ignited, if you will, by the Katrina Effort case. Justice Veit coming down, allowing a young woman who strangled her baby, which you mentioned in your speech, tossed it over the fence, and then was allowed to walk without any jail time. And I'm going to quote directly from your speech, and then I want to have a discussion with you about what you've said here. You say, 6 years ago, a young woman gave birth alone in her parents' basement and proceeded to strangle her newborn son and dispose of the body by throwing it over the fence into the neighbor's yard. Honorable Senators, this is a sad story. It is unfathomable that a young woman's mind can get to such a point of desperation where the only option is to commit such an act. Now, Senator, you didn't mince words there. You gave a very vivid illustration of truth and fact about what the circumstances were around the situation involving the death of this baby boy. You then go on to say that this woman was in a state of desperation. And when I read those words, I kind of wondered because, you know, I grew up in a time where pregnancy has always been marketed as being a problem. If you're a young woman or a young girl and find yourself impregnated, and that the problem is easily disposed of. You just go and have an abortion. Of course, young women are lied to about the implications and repercussions of that act, that for some, not for all, but for a large measure of them, there's guilt and other associations with this. Is this truly an act of desperation, or have we arrived at a time in Canada here, in this disposable society, this society that doesn't take self responsibility at all seriously? Is it desperation, or do we have another factor going on here?
Well, it's hard for me to say. But, you know, the act had to be a desperate one because we're dealing with life. You know, there's no question that our society has become so permissive that it's really hard to say what this young woman was thinking. But I would definitely give her the benefit of the doubt that she most likely found herself in a state of desperation. And that's why I used the words that I did. And you only hope that when you do these things and you're bringing an issue to light like this, that you use the correct words. And I was very, very, you know, I was cautious in dealing with her because, you know, unless you know exactly and have talked to the woman, which I haven't, you really, really don't know. But the thing is that I think that anybody that would end up in a situation like this, it's an act of desperation.
You go on to say in your speech, this ruling insinuates that society accepts this case of infanticide as an act of abortion, an act for which Canada has no law. The way in which the Provincial Court of Appeal dealt with this case in particular, the reasons for judgment, highlights what may result when Parliament chooses not to deal with issues of morality, but elects to pass those issues to our justice system. To figure out what, by using laws that are vague and in the case of abortion, do not exist at all. And, you know, I think, Senator, when I talk to people, which I get a chance to speak to large crowds, most Canadians find are shocked when they find out that Canada has no law governing abortion. Well, we do. It's as long as the baby hasn't taken a breath. You can kill a baby, you know, past gestation, you know, even if it's still in the womb.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. And how has this been allowed to happen, Senator? How, and even the most hardened liberal I meet says, well, we should have something, you know?
Well, I think that, unfortunately, there are not many politicians that have had the courage of their convictions to deal with this. Once we lose the respect for life, all is lost. And there's many of us that believe that life begins at conception. And there is no doubt that there's a lot of people that don't understand that abortions can be carried out second, third trimester. And so, you know, this is what's shocking, that people have just buried their heads in the sand to a vast degree, in spite of the fact that there are a lot of people quite active out there trying to bring this subject to light. And some of the members of Parliament, present members of Parliament, are very, very active and vociferous on this issue. And it may make a difference. If we do nothing, nothing will happen. The status quo will exist. And I think it's time that we stand up for what we believe in, especially those of us that believe in the sanctity of life, that if we don't stand up, who will?
You know, it goes beyond that, Senator, because I do a lot of work within the public education system and a lot of work with our youth. I think the fact that children are given the message that it's okay to kill a baby in the womb sends a message to the youth of Canada that they're disposable, that they're not worth. Their lives are so meaningless that their mothers can murder them with the help of a doctor. You know, all those agencies that are supposed to be helping. Isn't there a psychological factor to this as well that goes right to the identity of what it is to be a Canadian, what the identity of this nation is? When we start allowing mothers to kill their babies, throw them over the fence, and then have a judge say, well, Canadians are going to grieve with the mother because they understand this. You know, there seems to be a total disconnect from, well, number one, the judge's understanding of what the community values of Canadians are, because I've yet to find a Canadian that grieved for the mother under these circumstances. But there's also a huge disconnect in the message that we're sending to our youth and our young people. You know, this is a time in the world when there is so much going on, so much terror, so much war, so much brutality, so much terror, so much harm and violence, that shouldn't our nation, shouldn't the message we be sending to our youth is one about you are so valued that we protect your life? Children are so important to us as Canadians that we have laws that will keep you safe, even when those that should be loving you might want to harm you. You know, what are we doing here? I think we have just lost complete understanding of what it is to be a Canadian, the sanctity of life. You know, I don't think you have to be religious or come from a place of indoctrination that recognizes the value that life should have to a civil nation. Have we disconnected this with our wanting to be convenient and promoting the rights of women? My position is women have all the rights in the world. You have the right to keep your knees crossed, you know. In this day and age, there is room for that discussion. Isn't it time that we saw more elected officials have the courage to take the stand of morality for this nation, of identity for this nation?
Exactly. We've lost our, we have no moral compass. We're wandering aimlessly on this issue, and it's time that politicians start standing up for the rights of the unborn and the born. Because if we don't, and this doesn't only apply to Canada, I look at this much in a much larger scope. I think Canadians, we should be setting the example.
Yes,
but there's no question that this is worldwide. You know, when a civilized world or a so-called civilized world is prepared to accept this type of behavior, I think we're in great jeopardy. I think this is more dangerous than any hydrogen bombs or anything. I think this is the beginning of a huge moral decay that could lead to real trauma in our society. And I believe it's time that some of us that are in a position to stand up should stand up and be counted. And I'm one of them that's prepared to stand up and be counted. And I just hope that men and women stand up beside some of us that are prepared to do this. And unfortunately, I've only got about a year left in the Senate. But there's some good people coming behind, and I'm sure that if we give them the proper support, they will do what's right and carry on this fight and make sure that we do develop laws that give us the moral compass that this country needs, especially for our youth.
And I'm going to read from one of your next statements that you make in the speech, because I appreciate the wording that you used in this, Senator. You say this: on these matters, Parliament has chosen not to provide the necessary direction that is needed to protect the interests and the values of our society. When we choose not to debate and deal with these issues of morality, we risk losing respect for the sanctity of life and other common values. I love the phrase that you use, when we choose not to debate, because this is a conscious decision. You see, I don't think a lot of people have lost their moral compass. I think they are in fear of expressing the direction that they think they should go to. They have been shot down. And I, in another segment, I referred to the temper tantrum of the politically correct, you know, as being loud and raucous. And yet, you know, civil Canadians don't want to get into a screaming match. But it is time that there is, in this country, a civil debate. One that's dialogue is centered on finding truth and fact. The technology nowadays opens this door, because nobody can no longer argue about the various stages of a baby and the womb and all those other things. Technology has given us a glimpse into what really goes on. We can no longer argue about the fact that women are harmed when they are told that there's no repercussions or ill effect from abortion. There's too many testimonies, too many stories, too many witnesses to the harm that's done. This is not about us not having a moral compass. This is about us being conformed and confined into not speaking in our democracy. And isn't it time that people just kind of, what is the term, cowboyed up a little bit on this, and we saw some real leadership? You've opened the door on this, but golly, I hope there's a few more cowboys out there.
I don't know whether cowboys are right, because I do live on a ranch, but the thing is that I think you, Kerry, you hit the nail right on the head. We have to start a civil debate, and the extremes at either end got to be ignored, and that civil discussion or debate has to take place within the country. Mm. And, you know, the extremes do damage to the cause for and against, and I think that this is where people have become fearful, because most people spend their lives in their own families and in their own interests. There's not many that have the privilege of serving like I have and others have, you know. But the debate has to include everybody. It has to be a debate that's civil enough to bring everyone into it, for and against, but in a civil manner. And then we have a chance of making a difference. Because as long as it's sensationalized from either end, and, you know, the sensationalized, the damage that's done by the extremists has done a lot of damage, because it allows the other side to say, see, I told you these people couldn't be dealt with. Hmm. And I think that that's what we have to get into. And I think it's our responsibility as political people, as political leaders, or whatever you want to call us, to lead this this civil debate, and bring it out to the forefront. Because as you said earlier, there's a lot of people that don't understand that without any laws on abortion like we have in Canada, there's a huge area for a huge amount of abuse, and if we don't do something about it, it will continue on, and we are going to lose, sadly, as a society.
I can't agree with you more. Senator, what would you like to see civil Canadians do? Because, see, I believe that we should value our nation enough to be actively participating in our democracy and all the things that go with it. That means exercising our right to free speech. That means exercising our opportunity and right to speak to our elected officials. That includes being active within a political party and determining the leadership of this nation. As a senator, and what you've seen, because you have a lot of political experience here, tell our viewers what really matters. How can they get their message across to their elected officials? What should people be doing? I see already there's a big campaign already underway that says we want the debate on the abortion issue. What are effective, constructive means for people to participate in their democracy, get the ear of the elected officials? And what I see mostly important is support those that are taking leadership roles, because everybody says, oh, well, look at the senators out there speaking. We don't have to do it because he's got a voice. No, people need support. They need to know that there's a machine behind them, that this is representative of Canadians. How can people galvanize this action into a meaningful movement to change what is happening in this nation, to put a stop to basically, you know, killing of our babies?
Well, a voice of a politician is important, but a voice of the populace at large is as important, if not more important. And I think the people just have to. There are opportunities to participate in this at various levels, and I think that some of us are in a position to create the awareness. But then our various there are various organizations that are quite active in seeking a resolve to this horrific problem, and I think people got to go and find things of where they can participate. I can recall I spoke to a young man once, and he says, well, Jerry, you're pro-life. And I said, I am. And he says, oh, you guys are a bunch of wackos. And I said, well, I said, that's the way it goes. And we had a bit of a conversation about it, and I told him one of the reasons why I was, and he just sort of dismissed it. And about 2 months later, I'm sitting at home, I get the phone rings, and this individual phones me, and he says, Jerry, remember we spoke about your position on life and that? And I said, yes. He said, could you direct me? He says, there's a young girl that just came home pregnant, and their parents phoned me. And they want guidance as to where they can go with her to discourage her from getting an abortion. And I said to him, well, I find that strange, but very encouraging that you called.
Mm.
He says, I'm serious, Jerry. So I gave him direction. And, you know, that message has to get through to more people, because he was totally, totally opposed to my position. And yet he made that call.
Mm.
And I know it changed him somehow. Well, we've got to tell the story the way it is.
Tell the truth,
yep. And the truth always prevails. And I can assure you, people like yourselves with your radio station, whatever it is, whatever level of media, whatever medium of communication one chooses, try to get people involved. Because people, Canadians are decent.
Yes.
And they have a respect for life. It's just that this is something that has been sensationalized by some, terrorized by others. It's something that has to be brought forward in a civil discussion.
Senator,
and if it is, we have a chance.
Senator,
and we should never, ever think that it isn't possible.
Senator, you end your speech by saying this. Honorable Senators, it is our duty to preserve the integrity of our society and to ensure that the most vulnerable get the protection that they need. I think that we both agree that not only is this limited to the senators, this is expanding beyond that. That's to every elected official and to every decent Canadian who understands the need to protect life and to value life and have part of that as our identity for this nation, Senator. And your words, again, it is our duty. This is an active call. This is a call to action. This is an invitation to participate. And I suspect that with the Katrina effort case, and I have to tell you just a little story, and I know we're running out of time fast here, but the night the news came down about the Katrina effort getting a walk, I had relatives staying at my home in South Langley, which we're not too far from each other. And these two individuals happened to be adoptive parents of two grown children. They adopted, you know, 40 years ago. The look of horror on their face to hear that somebody disposed of or killed this baby, when there are so many homes that are just so desperate to provide love and support and security for children, they were literally mortified that somebody would do this. And, you know, here's two people who gave their entire lives to two children who were not biologically their own, but loved and cared for and provided, and they've just had their first grandchild. You know, that's another message that needs to get out there. There are so many different options available for young moms these days that these children will be cared and loved for. You know, we got a lot of work to do on educating the public on this subject matter, but I think the debate has now been opened. The debate has been declared, I think, Senator St. Germain, thanks to you.
Well, I'm just a small cog in the system, and there are people that are much more proficient than I am in communicating this message. But I will be there like we should all be there, Carrie, and let's hope and pray that we have the courage to make the changes that are necessary to protect life.
I don't think I don't think we have a choice, Senator St. Germain. I think the time is now. The evidence is there. You know, this debate is going to happen whether Prime Minister Harper wants it or not. I sense a tsunami. I've used that description because I watched as the Katrina effort case kind of reverberated around this nation. We did shows on Roadkill Radio with it. I've watched the groundswell of disbelief mobilize into a call to action. And now I suggest that there's a tsunami building across this country, one like our elected officials have never seen, because nobody can argue with the evidence. Nobody can argue with the fact that this is real and now. I mean, we both know, too, just following on the heels of the Effort case, we have another baby's body found here in the Fraser River. Something has to be done. There has to be a clear message sent that this nation values children and values life.
Well, you have a good job to do as the at the media level. Continue on your good work, and may God bless us all as we go forward.
Well, our job's a lot easier when we have leaders like you, Senator, and I appreciate your time for joining us today. Important message, important discussion, important debate, a debate that will happen thanks to voices like yours.
Thank you, Kerry.
Good night.
Good night.
Senator Jerry St. Germain demonstrating what political leadership should really look like, a call to action, a duty to be involved. This is our nation. These are our values. We need to stand up for it. Thank you for joining us. I'm Kerry Simpson.
Honorable senators, the Alberta Court of Appeals' recent judgment on a case concerning infanticide sets a troubling precedent. 6 years ago, a young woman gave birth alone in her parents' basement and proceeded to strangle her newborn son and dispose of the body by throwing it over a fence into the neighbor's yard. Honorable senators, this is a sad, real sad story. It is unfathomable that a young woman's mind could get to such a point of desperation where the only option is to commit such an act. However, what is most disturbing are the justifications given by the appeals judge in sentencing. Prior to the appeal, two separate lower court juries would reach a verdict of second-degree murder under the criminal code. The murder conviction would be overturned for a lesser conviction of infanticide. The appeals judge cited in her ruling that because Canada has no laws governing abortion, Canadians sympathize with mothers who give birth without support, and they grieve for the infant's death, but also for the mother. End of quote. This ruling insinuates that society accepts this case of infanticide as an act of abortion, an act to which Canada has no laws governing it. The way in which the Provincial Court of Appeal dealt with this case, in particular the reasons for judgment, highlights what may result when Parliament chooses not to deal with issues of morality, but elects to pass those issues off to our justice system to figure out using laws that are really vague, and in the case of abortion, do not exist at all. On these matters, Parliament has chosen not to provide the necessary direction that is needed to protect the interests and the values of our society. And when we choose not to debate and deal with these issues of morality, we risk losing respect for the sanctity of life and other real common values. Honorable senators, it's our duty to preserve the integrity of our society and to ensure that the most vulnerable get the protection that they really need. Thank you.
Your voice and your vote matter. Please ensure that your family and friends become aware and active. Forward this series to at least five other Canadians. Ask them to become informed and involved. Life matters, and you can make the difference. You can be the voice for these little ones. I'm Kerry Simpson, President of Culture Guard.